Joining me now is Dr. Scott Atlas. He's the David and Joan Tradel Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University and a member of the Hoover Institution's Working Group on Healthcare Policy. He is a world-renowned physician and a scholar of advanced medical care. Also, was the professor in chief of neuroradiology at Stanford University Medical Center for 14 years. Man, I've been wanting to talk to you forever, Dr. Atlas. I appreciate you coming on the show and say hello to the folks of Western Washington.
Sure. Thanks very much for having me.
It's a real pleasure. Contact tracing here is a big, big topic, Dr. Atlas, and I've heard you discuss this a bit. Our governor is pushing this very, very hard. At one point, had plans to make it compulsory, was going to have restaurants cause people to give their name, address, phone number, et cetera, email address for the pleasure of eating in a restaurant. And I'd heard you describe that contact tracing can be very, very useful, but at a certain stage of the introduction of a virus to a community.
Yeah, I mean, contact tracing is a sort of very common and well-known tool of public health, and it's very useful at certain stages of such a pandemic, and that stage is in the beginning, not after the disease is widespread, highly contagious, millions of people walking around infected. And the point of contact tracing is to prevent the establishment of a pandemic at the beginning, particularly useful when you have a very small group confined, like the sort of religious sect in South Korea, where they identified somebody in the very earliest stages, and they did this very local, confined contact tracing. The idea of contact tracing is good for a future pandemic and for the potential second wave that people are talking about. And, of course, that's just potential for some next season or next spring, next winter. But once we're in a situation like we are now, it's not very useful. In fact, it's not just not useful, it makes no sense. Because once you have millions of people, particularly when there's 50% of people who are asymptomatic, the implementation of something like that is just simply, you know, fantasy. You have somebody walk in and they've already been around people who are, let's just say, on public transportation, and there's millions of people already with the infection. I'm not sure what the value of that is. In fact, we know it absolutely cannot be a prerequisite for opening for a variety of reasons.
Hmm. And what I hear you describing, Dr. Atlas, Scott Atlas is with us. What I hear you describing is something that I think is sort of endemic to this entire thing, particularly in Washington State and the West Coast states, is sort of a lack of logic. I'd also read you very early on talking about the fact that children appear to be at no risk for this virus. I read recently a study that indicates, in fact, no known recordings of a child passing COVID-19 to a parent. And yet we are examining in Washington State, in fact, Dr. Atlas, keeping the schools shut through next year.
Yeah, I mean, this is just really an example of a complete lack of logic, a complete lack of rational thought, although well-intended. And it's because of the fear. The fear has really become part of the reason for making policy, which, of course, can never be. That's just completely inappropriate. The data shows the following. When there is essentially zero risk of dying in people who are under 18 and children. If you look at the latest statistic, which actually I just happened to look at because I look at this about 20 times a day, the CDC website says 68,998 deaths. 12 were in children. That means 99.99% were not in children. When you look at 12 deaths out of the first 69,000 recorded by the CDC, let's just compare that to something. Influenza, roughly, they estimate 600 deaths, okay, from children, in children. When we look at the data, you just can't make a conclusion that there's any danger here. New York City, of the first 16,000 deaths, 10 were in children who were under 18. One was in a child who didn't have a serious underlying condition. We're talking about 99.994% of deaths not in children who didn't have a serious underlying condition. And when you look at the data from the recently published study in JAMA Pediatrics, Journal of AMA Pediatrics, 46 pediatric hospitals in North America, they said three basic things. Number one, the risk of influenza is far higher in children than COVID-19. Number two, the serious diseases from COVID-19 are far higher in adults than those in children who have the infection. But the most important thing is three, if the risk of a critical illness in children is far less with COVID-19 than with influenza. The rationale for shutting down schools in children who have no risk is literally irrational, unless you really wanted to go to the point of saying every November through March, we must shut down all schools because old people can die from influenza and children can die from influenza. Where are those calls? Why aren't these people saying that? We must close down all of society from November to March because children and adults can die from influenza. I mean, this is just, it's totally irrational. We know who to protect here. Okay, yeah. The protection must be and should have been from day one at the people who were at high risk from dying. And every medical student in the state of Washington, I can guarantee you, knows that the people who were going to be at risk from a viral upper respiratory infection are people who are diabetics, older people with chronic underlying diseases. This is obvious. Yet, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in the state of Washington, you had a disaster in a nursing home. They didn't protect the people who needed to be protected and instead locked down all society. I mean, there is no logic going on here. Luckily for us, Americans understand logic. And when I present the data, the facts are overwhelming that children have no problem with this disease. I mean, I'd like to touch on something, which is this headline sensationalizing these very, very rare disease that is reminiscent of something called Kawasaki disease.
Yes.
If I may. Kawasaki disease is a disease that is exceptionally rare to begin with. And I'm shocked that it's even in the vernacular of public discussion. I mean, this is a disease that is a very, very esoteric kind of topic. 2,000 to 4,000 cases per year occur in the United States, unknown cause. And it's a treatable disease, by the way. No one mentions that this disease is treatable. But in this situation, COVID-19 has been associated very, very rarely, perhaps a couple hundred cases in the country with this associated something like Kawasaki disease, which, of course, is a tragic thing when an exception happens in a child. We all know this. I have my own children. But the reality is this is an exceptionally rare possibility, much less common than the exceptionally rare Kawasaki disease to begin with. It doesn't negate the overwhelming evidence. I mean, this is not how medical perspective is. People that are running with this sort of stuff don't understand that every doctor in the world knows that there are rare exceptions to diseases. And those exceptions can be very, very tragic. But, you know, you have to have a perspective here. You don't lock down society because of some kind of very, very exceptional occurrence that is really just, you know, this happens in every single disease. I mean, I just really think there is a tremendous amount of fear and honestly, an embarrassing level of sloppy analysis by some very smart people going on here.
Dr. Scott Atlas is with us, and I've been excited to talk to Dr. Atlas for a long time. Got a few minutes left with him. So kind with your time. Scott, I don't have anywhere near your education, clearly in the medical world. I have gained over a lifetime of experience, multiple PhDs in politics and media. And I will tell you that when the reporting came out about the kids are now at risk of coronavirus, I predicted that they were going to make this turn. Because there's a lot of fear reporting. And in our state of Washington, and this goes to the lack of logic, Dr. Atlas, they have never, ever emphasized what you just did about long-term care centers. In fact, I don't know if you know this, about 3 weeks ago, our governor, Jay Inslee, who's insisting on the 1,500 army of contact tracers, had put COVID-19 patients back in to nursing homes and long-term care facilities. But he said that they're properly sequestered. This is the same Jay Inslee who has told us, Scott, that reopening Washington State is contingent upon large-scale testing of basically the whole population and this contact tracing. This is what he's telling us is requirement for a full reopening.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, you know, I first want to make sure everybody understands nothing I say is political here. I'm really just talking from the medical perspective and about the science. But I want to point out that kind of thinking is really, to me, not just a ridiculous kind of thought, but, you know, we look at other states. This is common here. When you look in the United States, maybe 20 states, if not more, have more than half their deaths inside nursing homes. These are states that lock down, and they're allowing a wholly inadequate filtering of people coming to nursing homes to occur. In New York State, there was an order to totally lock down on March 20th, and it wasn't until 7 weeks later that there was an order to be very careful and to maybe start testing people who come into nursing homes. I mean, this is like total incompetence. And this is not just New York and not just the state of Washington. You look at states from the West Coast, the Midwest, and East Coast. And also, you can look outside the United States, by the way. Okay, we have no, we have no monopoly on completely inept public officials here. When you look at Switzerland, which I admire as a country, 53% of their deaths are in nursing homes. When you look at Sweden, who's been very rational about the way to approach this, they have more than 50% of their deaths in nursing homes. I mean, this is literally medical school 101 here to stop that kind of thing. I've been calling for weeks, as have many other people, for testing everyone who walks into a nursing home. You have to have some kind of strategic, common sense logic here. When we have public officials dictating policy, you know, empathy and caution is not enough. We need people who are competent, who understand how to analyze the situation, no matter how complex the data. And if you can't do that, you ought to step aside, because they're really killing people, not only in the nursing homes, they're literally killing people with the policy itself. The policy itself has inculcated such fear that people with critical medical care needs are not seeking help. 40% of acute stroke patients are not calling for help. They're not coming into the hospital. 650,000 people on chemotherapy in the United States for cancer, half of them are not getting their chemo. We have two-thirds of people skipping their cancer screening tests, and more than half of children are not seeking and not getting their immunizations because people are afraid to come toward a medical facility. We are setting up a massive catastrophe in healthcare. And I'm not talking about the economic consequences here that also kill people, but that's a separate issue. I mean, these people in charge, honestly, frankly, they don't know what they're doing, and they have instilled fear into the people so that when we do reopen, we are going to see, and we already are seeing, totally irrational requirements for reopening. This idea that you go outside and you need a mask, I mean, I'm in Palo Alto, California here. I see people driving around in cars alone wearing a mask. Okay, I'm not making fun of them. It's a manifestation of the fear put onto the public by public officials who don't know what they're doing. And what we see here is people running outside on the track. I run here at Stanford University outside. I see people running alone, isolated from everyone else, wearing a mask. I mean, this is just totally out of control here. And if we keep going like this, the country is committing, frankly, national suicide here.
Yeah, this is why I wanted to talk to you. I appreciate you so much speaking from this medical perspective. And I also appreciate you leaving politics to hacks like me. That's what we do. That's what we need you to speak out this way. Listen, you know what? In Washington State, it's not even masks, Scott. They have people wearing face coverings. One of the things people do here is they put silk scarves over their face. And they will shame you if you have nothing in your face. They'll shame you from beneath a silk scarf, and they're being told. We are being told up here, Scott, that this is the pitch right now. You are literally killing people if you don't put a mask on your face. That's literally what they tell us. If you do not wear a mask, you are literally killing people. So I would just close off with one last question for Dr. Scott Atlas. If you could change one thing today and you could, you know, convince the powers that be to change one thing about what we're doing, what would you prioritize most of all?
Well, you know, I'm going to go with two things, or it's really one policy, which is highly restricted, targeted protection of people who are very old, particularly in nursing homes, and letting everything else open. There is zero reason, zero rationale to keep schools closed, to keep businesses closed, to keep offices closed. If the working population, people under 60, I want to say this statistic, if you're under 60, your risk is less than or equal to seasonal flu, period. And if you don't panic and freak out and isolate yourself to your home during flu season, you're making a huge mistake to think that that's necessary during this.
Dr. Scott Atlas has joined us, and just such a pleasure to talk with you, the Hoover Institution. Do you like to be followed on social media? Do you want people to do that, or would you rather just maintain being an academic?
Okay, I have a Twitter account. I haven't looked at it for 3 months, but I have people at my staff is keeping people informed about some of the things that I'm saying on Twitter. You know, I find, honestly, one of the causes of the fear is the hyperbole on social media. Everybody who can do a Google search thinks they're an expert, and we're living in a very strange world where we somehow turn on Shark Tank. People that run Shark Tank are giving advice about hydroxychloroquine on TV, and then I'm asked to respond. I mean, this is just totally out of control.
Yeah.
Listen to your doctor about drugs. Use your own logic and common sense. And, you know, I think Americans, I trust regular Americans far more than politicians about these things at this point.
Very good. Dr. Atlas, thank you for joining us on the Todd Herman Show. Godspeed to you, and stay well. Thank you so much.